This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the final hour of power here on this Monday night edition of Overtime. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willekamp taking you up to 10 o'clock before we hand things over to the Infinity Sports Network. Big shout-out to our guy, Barrett Salee of CBSSports.com. Just joined us in the last segment talking all things college football. As it feels like, man, we're getting closer and closer to everyone's favorite time of the year. Now, as close as we are to the college football season, we're even closer to the start of NFL training camp. 9 days from today, Wednesday, July the 24th. The first day that all of the Washington Commanders will be out on the practice field together for training camp. Special overtime this week as we're going to be on with you 4 out of the 5 days in the week. Want to bring some continuity to the show. We're going to kick off the 9 o'clock hour with part one of our Commanders position preview series. Over the next 4 days, we will preview every position group on the Washington Commanders as we get geared up for NFL training camp. And I really went back and forth with where I was going to start, but I figured no better place than to start than in the trenches. The offensive line and the defensive line for the Washington Commanders is what we will preview here tonight. Tomorrow we will talk about the receivers in the secondary. The day after that, we will talk about the linebackers and the running backs. And then the final position preview will end with the quarterback position and the running backs. Quarterbacks and running backs coming up on the final day. Or quarterbacks and tight ends, rather, coming up on the final day. I want to get into the offensive line and defensive line now, though. The Washington Commanders, in what they were last year offensively, it simply wasn't good enough. 25th in the National Football League in terms of points per game. A lot of that had to do with bad play calling, but like let's just be real about it. 24th in terms of yards per contest. They simply were not good enough last year on the offensive side of the football, and a lot of that had to do with the offensive line and their performance. But as I've said all offseason long, I even said it at points during last year, the offensive line for Washington was better than what the general public will give it credit for. I just think the play calling did not benefit that group at all. There's no way in hell that the plan going into last year was to throw fifth-round pick Sam Howell out to the Wolves and have him drop back 40-plus times per contest. It's not the ingredients for success with a young quarterback. It's just not. And while you look at this team last year, in terms of when you look at this team last year, in terms of why they struggled on the offensive side of the football, I think you can blame the quarterback position. I think you can blame play calling. But ultimately, I think, and I say it all the time, since we've become further removed from the end of the regular season, I'm able to look at Eric Bieniemy without any bias. I'm able to look at Eric Bieniemy without any favoritism. Because I'll be honest, I was the one that was banging on the table for Eric Bieniemy. I wanted Eric Bieniemy to come here. I thought he would be the disciplinarian that this group needed. But as we continue to find out, it was a little bit too much. Sam Cosmi was quoted in the Washington Post about a month and a half ago, saying that Eric Bieniemy wouldn't even let offensive players wear their hat backwards in meetings. This is not college. This isn't Army. It's the National Football League where guys bring in big-time bucks. So if you're an offensive coordinator, you got an issue with a guy wearing his hat backwards, Go kick rocks. Go mow a lawn. Fly a kite. Do whatever the hell you want to do. What Sam Cosby should have did is stormed his big ass in Eric Bieniemy's office and said, hey, if we're not going to run the football, I don't want to be a part of this thing. I've been a part of bad football teams. I've been a part of a locker room that couldn't stand the play caller and the head coach. It's a wicked dynamic to try and overcome. And Washington was able to do that last year. Kinda. This year, though, I think this offensive line is going to be much better. It's almost killed a fruit fly. This offensive line is going to be much better than what I think the general public gave it credit for a season ago. I firmly believe that. I think this offensive line will be way better. The big question, though, that exists up front in a lot of people's minds is left tackle. But when I look at this Washington Commanders offensive line, I think only two spots up front are concretely solidified along the offensive line. I think it's center with Tyler Biadasz, and I think it's offensive guard, right guard in particular, with Sam Cosmi. I think a lot of folks are paying attention to a position battle at left tackle, but in reality, I think they're going to be position guards at left tackle, left guard, and right tackle. And there's a reason I'm penciling in Biadasz and Sam Cosmi. Sam Cosmi, first of all, they got to get an extension done with Sam Cosmi this offseason if they were smart, right? That's what they should do. That's here nor there. He has established himself as one of the best interior linemen in the National Football League last year. His big issue is health. Can he stay healthy? But last year when he was healthy, he played really well. Washington bringing over Mr. Consistency in the middle. Tyler Biadasz, he manned that Cowboys offensive line the past couple of years. Tyler Biadasz hasn't allowed a sack in his last 1,100 pass-blocking snaps. He's been lights out. He's been lights out. Made the Pro Bowl last year. Replaced Eagle center Jason Kelsey. So the kid can play. The kid can play. The big question for him is, will he be able to steady Washington's offensive line? Guards next to him better. Will he make the other four offensive linemen that he is alongside better? Will he help the young quarterback, Jaden Daniels, in terms of protections? Can he do it? He did it last year in Dallas. He's done it the last couple of years in Dallas. I think they have high expectations for what he is going to be. And they should. And they should. Because last year, a big part of why Washington stunk and was god-awful up front is because Nick Gates couldn't block my ass. I would have gave Nick Gates the blues. Obviously, I'm being facetious when I say that. But he struggled last year at center. The combination of Sadiq Charles and Chris Paul was not good enough at left guard last year. It just wasn't. So, in reality, while I think the offensive line is better than what they get credit for, I also feel like we're being oblivious if we just think the only position battle up front is going to be at left tackle. That's simply not the case. I look at Nick Allegretti coming in, the free agent from the Kansas City Chiefs, Super Bowl winning pedigree, and it's automatically assumed, because he's had some good media availabilities this summer, that he's going to be the starting left guard. You don't think Chris Paul has anything to say about that? You don't think that And I blank completely on his name. I'm the youngest in charge movement. I can't blank on names. I'm not old. You don't think that Ricky Stromberg, has something to say about that? Somebody that I know they're pretty high on internally? There's going to be competition galore up front. Even Brandon Coleman, the rookie left tackle out of TCU. A lot of folks think that he is going to be able to come in and hopefully earn that left tackle spot from day one. But I'm of the mindset that even if he does not perform up the snuff at left tackle, even if he ain't good enough at left tackle, he is one of your five best offensive linemen right now, and you got to find a way to get him on the field. Whether that's left guard, whether it's right tackle, he's got to find a way to get on the field because he's one of your best five guys up front right now. If I had to make my ideal scenario for Washington's offensive line, I think it's Brandon Coleman at left tackle. I think you let Nick Allegretti and Ricky Stromberg battle it out at guard. I think Tyler Biadasz is probably your center right now. I think Sam Cosmi clearly is your right guard. And then I think you got some competition at right tackle as well between Andrew Wiley, the incumbent starter, and Corton Lucas, who has been a steady Eddie for Washington when he's gotten an opportunity to get into the lineup. That is what I think happens up front next year for Washington. But that's a big question mark still. I understand it. That is probably still one of the biggest, not one of the, it's the biggest question mark on this football team is what five will they roll out there offensively up front? Part one of our Commanders position preview series right here on The Fan. We'll break down every position group on the Washington Commanders here over the next 4 days as we get geared up for training camp. We just gave you a preview of Washington's offensive line. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, a group that had a mass exodus last year. The defensive line losing Chase Young.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Montez Sweat midseason. We'll preview that unit coming up next here on The Fan. Welcome back. It's overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock before we hand things over to the Infinity Sports Network. Right now, continuing part one of our four-part series, previewing every position group on the Washington Commanders as we get geared up for NFL training camp. Day one of camp next Wednesday, July the 24th, out in Ashburn. Veterans, rookies, coaches, everybody that's a member of the organization will be out and about getting the opportunity to represent the Burgundy and Gold for this year, man. It is going to be a star-studded season. It is going to be a season full of excitement. And I say it all the time here post-draft. I want to be known, and this is not me trying to say that I want to be known as somebody that's biased. Just hear me out here. I want to be known as the guy that has the most conviction about why this team is going to be good this year. And when I say good, I mean playing meaningful football in late December, early January. I continue to say it. When you bring in a quarterback the caliber of Jaden Daniels, it completely takes the ceiling off of your football team. Because we don't know just how good Jaden Daniels is going to be. But the one thing that I continue to say that's different about Jaden Daniels compared to the last two first-round picks at quarterback, Dwayne Haskins, God rest his soul, and selfish-ass Robert Griffin III. Think about when you talked about and described both of those quarterbacks. With Robert, it was, oh, he's so electric as a runner. Oh, he's so beautiful when it comes to his deep ball accuracy. With Dwayne, Urban Meyer said he was the best 7-on-7 quarterback he's ever seen in his life. The arm talent was out of this world. And you saw it if you got to watch training camp practices of Dwayne. It didn't always translate to games, but those two dudes had special physical ability. And it's the number one thing people talked about when describing their game and why they thought they'd have a chance to have success. The thing I love about Jaden Daniels that separates him from the rest of the pack, the first thing you hear someone say when they try and describe Jaden Daniels' game is, man, he's got the work ethic of a 15-year veteran. It's, oh, he's a film junkie. He's a football nerd. He understands it from the neck up. And that's why I think Jaden Daniels is going to hit the ground running. I already told you all. Offensive personnel, a lot of the time, dictates what you do offensively. People see Cliff Kingsbury coming over. They say air raid. They think air raid. But you didn't realize that James Conner led the National Football League in touchdowns while Cliff Kingsbury was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Kyler Murray had a career high in rushing yards under Cliff Kingsbury with the Arizona Cardinals. They had DeAndre Hopkins, Marquise Hollywood Brown, Rondale Moore. You're going to throw the ball around the yard 35, 40 times a game when you've got that type of personnel offensively. Put it on a t-shirt now. This is how you describe the 2024 Washington Commanders offense. Exotic, smash-mouth football. They're going to run two tight end sets, three tight end sets, and they are going to run the football. Something that they could not do consistently last year, or that they refused to do consistently last year. And if the running game is going to have impact, then Jayden Daniels has a much easier shot of hitting the ground running if they have a legit threat in the running game. If they can utilize play action. If they can move the pocket. All things we didn't see last year with Eric Bieniemy as the play caller and with Sam Howell as the quarterback. I'm not trying to get too deep in the weeds here, but when it comes to the position preview, we'll get to running backs a little bit later on in the week. They got to run the football to have success. The defensive line, though, to me, is a group that I think has a ton of pressure on them. A couple of free agent signings. Dorrance Armstrong signed a pretty hefty deal from Dallas. You brought over Dante Fowler, Cleveland Farrell. Honestly, I thought was my favorite signing by them when it comes to this offseason. He has never lived up to the hype of being the number two overall pick because he shouldn't have been. But what he was last year for San Francisco was a consistent edge setter that Washington, quite frankly, didn't have post-trade deadline when they lost Chase Young and Montez Sweat. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, more overtime here on The Fan. It is going to be a big-time NFL season here in our nation's capital. Football will be as fun as it's been in recent memory coming up with the 2024 Washington Commanders. I don't know how it's going to look. I'm not guaranteeing a playoff berth. Not yet, at least. But just from being out there, the two sessions that I got to be out there during mandatory minicamp, there is a different vibe and energy around this program. And when you have a staff littered with as many former players as they do, you understand why they bring the juice out to the practice field each and every day. They have a legit chance, I think, to take the National Football League by storm. They have a chance, in my opinion, to be this year's version of the Houston Texans. I really do believe that. You got to remember just how damn good Jayden Daniels is. And I know we had a conversation last week about whether or not you play him in preseason. He had 350 yards passing and 250 yards rushing in an SEC game. You tell me how good Jayden Daniels is going to be here in Washington. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll continue to take a big picture look at the National Football League when we're joined by former NFL General Manager Randy Mueller next here on The Fan. Welcome back. It's overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Liddell Willingham riding with you for about another half hour before we dish things over to the Infinity Sports Network. Want to continue talking all things National Football League. Joining us right now is former NFL General Manager Randy Mueller. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Randy Mueller _ former 2000 NFL Executive of the Year and the co-host of the Football GM podcast for The Athletic. Randy, I appreciate you giving me some time as always, my man.
I'm doing great. Good to be back with you.
Yes, indeed, my man. It's been a while since I've been able to catch up with you. Huge fan of your work. Always enjoy listening to you and Mike. It's been a while, like I said, Randy, since I got to talk to you. So I want to get your thoughts as we sit here about a week away from most teams reporting for training camp, we had six first-round quarterbacks be selected, the most in NFL history, Randy. Which one of these young quarterbacks, outside of the obvious answer, Caleb Williams, do you think is best set up to come in and have immediate success in their rookie campaign?
Well, that is a great question, and one that I'm not sure we're going to know the answer to right now. Obviously, you'd want the best roster surrounding that young guy. I think the way it's set up now, I think J.J. McCarthy has as good a chance as any. And that doesn't mean he's going to be the starter week one either.
Right.
I just think where the Vikings are as a franchise, I kind of like what they've done roster-wise. He's not going to have to play right now. I think the fact that Sam Darnold is there to learn from, I have a lot of faith in the coaching staff, in the scheme and the system there. So I think J.J. is set up the best. That's just my opinion because I think they're going to be a good team. We just may not be seeing that until week six or eight, or maybe even year two from that standpoint.
Yeah, I think the Minnesota quarterback situation, Randy, is going to be fascinating. I know there are a lot of reports coming out of St. Paul that, look, like they want to give Sam Darnold a legit shot. Kevin O'Connell feels like he can legitimately resurrect this young man's career. He's got a ton of talent, former top five pick, so it'll be fascinating to monitor that as the regular season and training camp plays out. Keep it on the quarterback position, though, Randy. Being a former general manager and someone that was in these negotiating rooms, what do you make of the forever-changing quarterback market where we sit right now? I think Cam Newton caught a lot of flack during the regular season, Randy, saying there are game changers and game managers. Yep. In terms of the guys that are deserving of those market-resetting contracts, there's probably only a handful, but as we're going to continue to find out here, the market is the market, and teams are going to have to pay the piper, so to speak. When you look at two situations in particular, Miami and Dallas, I was heavy on saying, look, I would have hit the reset button during the draft and sent both of those two quarterbacks elsewhere because I'm not comfortable giving them market-resetting deals. To start with Tua, if you were the Miami Dolphins, knowing how he fits like a glove in Mike McDaniel's system, do you think his success that he's been able to have is more of a result of the system or his talent at the quarterback position? And then a two-parter for you, would you ultimately pay Tua and give him that market-resetting contract?
I think the fact that Tua has been there in that system really lends itself to why he's been good. So I do think the system gets credit. But I do think his skill set fits perfectly in that system. Where I struggle and where I draw the line at with these quarterbacks is, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, when it comes time to pay, unless you have options, you're going to pay.
Right.
I would struggle with paying one of these guys who doesn't take my offense above and beyond what's being schemed. And that's a little bit of a struggle for me with Tua. Obviously, you have the durability issue. That's always going to be there with him. But can he do more when the play breaks down, or can he get you out of bad plays to get you plays above and beyond the scheme, the system? That I don't know yet. I think with regard to Dak, if you're comparing those two like you did in your question, I think we've seen Dak carry an offense above and beyond the play calls and the scheme somewhat. Not to the point where we've seen some of these other guys do it, but that to me is the defining note, is that can this quarterback take our offense above and beyond? And if he can, then you're going to pay him. That's why I think you're going to see a guy like Jordan Love get paid, you know, biggest money of all of them probably as soon as Green Bay can pay him, because he can take you above the scheme, above the play calls, and make plays. And I think that's the hard thing to define. I think that's probably why Jacksonville played Trevor Lawrence. Because he's got the skill set to go above and beyond the system. Now, he hasn't done it consistently, but it's there, so you have that hope. Some of these other guys, and I'll throw Jared Goff in there, who I like and had a great year last year, there's limitations because they can only, in my opinion, carry you as far as the scheme can carry you. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you answered it perfectly, and I think you're the perfect guy to talk about this because you've been in those rooms before. Going back to Miami here in particular, and you know how these negotiations go. It is literally the job of the team to tell said player why we don't think you're deserving of this contract. There's reports going on. I don't know if you guys have reported at The Athletic that there is some, there's a sizable gap in terms of where Miami and Tua are with these negotiations. How difficult is it, and what risk do you run in terms of fracturing the relationship long term when it comes to these contract negotiations? Because I'm sure Miami's putting up the numbers that we keep talking about. 1-7 versus playoff teams last year, 16 points per game in those 8 games compared to 35 in the others. So clearly there are some numbers that say maybe Tua isn't deserving of this contract.
Well, I surely like the idea that they're making him sweat a little bit and not just rolling over. I like their philosophy. I still think they'll make a deal. As we all know, deadlines spur actions, and there's really no deadline right now. When Tua has to roll his body out there again and put everything at risk in his career, that's probably when we'll see a deal get done. But I don't think the Dolphins have to pay him, at least not right now. They can afford to let him play out this year. They've got a tag for next year. There's time to pay and reward him. And I don't think there's a rift that develops at all if you're communicating with the player correctly and he understands where you're coming from. It's not a slight. It's not going to develop into a soiled relationship down the road. I think sometimes that gets overrated because we see it on the outside. Right. I think the media sees it. They want to drive that stake, but it's not really there. It doesn't really exist, having been a part of those conversations for years.
Yeah, excellent perspective right now as we're joined by former NFL general manager Randy Mueller. You can give him a follow on the old X app at @RandyMueller_. I want to take things to the NFC East here for a second. The New York Giants, the lab rat for the in-season or off-season hard knocks, rather, and you're getting plenty of insight into some of those really difficult conversations and decisions that they've had to make here. One, if you got to catch any of the hard knocks, then two, what did you make of Joe Shane's comments surrounding Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones?
Yeah, I've watched it thoroughly. In fact, I'm probably going to watch it more than once. I love this off-season version of it. Yeah. It's in the wheelhouse of GMs, right? These conversations happen. This is how you spend your life, in these kind of conversations and in these scenarios. So I like it. I'm surprised that Joe and the Giants have been as forthright as they are. There's a lot of information that can be matriculated down through a lot of different levels. And a lot of it has been out there for the fans, and I think fans are lucky to get this much. I think that the conversation that he had with Barkley when he told him they were going to let him be a free agent and not franchise him was fascinating to me because I think it's one thing to do right by the player, but it's the GM's job to do right by the franchise. And I think if we are to believe what we've seen, ownership clearly wanted to keep the running back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
San Francisco was a consistent edge setter that Washington, quite frankly, didn't have post-trade deadline when they lost Chase Young and Montez Sweat. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, more overtime here on The Fan. It is going to be a big-time NFL season here in our nation's capital. Football will be as fun as it's been in recent memory coming up with the 2024 Washington Commanders. I don't know how it's going to look. I'm not guaranteeing a playoff berth. Not yet, at least. But just from being out there, the two sessions that I got to be out there during mandatory minicamp, there is a different vibe and energy around this program. And when you have a staff littered with as many former players as they do, you understand why they bring the juice out to the practice field each and every day. They have a legit chance, I think, to take the National Football League by storm. They have a chance, in my opinion, to be this year's version of the Houston Texans. I really do believe that. you got to remember just how damn good Jayden Daniels is. And I know we had conversation last week about whether or not you play him in preseason. He had 350 yards passing and 250 yards rushing in an SEC game. You tell me how good Jayden Daniels is going to be here in Washington. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll continue to take a big picture look at the National Football League when we're joined by former NFL General Manager Randy Mueller next here on The Fan. Welcome back. It's overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Liddell Willingham riding with you for about another half hour before we dish things over to the Infinity Sports Network. Want to continue talking all things National Football League. Joining us right now is former NFL General Manager Randy Mueller. Make sure you give him a follow on the OX app at Randy Mueller _ former 2000 NFL Executive of the Year and the co-host of the Football GM podcast for The Athletic. Randy, I appreciate you giving me some time as always, my man.
I'm doing great. Good to be back with you.
Yes, indeed, my man. It's been a while since I've been able to catch up with you. Huge fan of your work. Always enjoy listening to you and Mike. It's been a while, like I said, Randy, since I got to talk to you. So I want to get your thoughts as we sit here about a week away from most teams reporting for training camp. We had 6 first-round quarterbacks be selected, the most in NFL history, Randy. Which one of these young quarterbacks, outside of the obvious answer in Caleb Williams, do you think is best set up to come in and have immediate success in their rookie campaign?
Well, that is a great question, and one that I'm not sure we're going to know the answer to right now. Obviously, you'd want the best roster surrounding that young guy. I think the way it's set up now, I think J.J. McCarthy has as good a chance as any, and that doesn't mean he's going to be the starter week one either.
Right.
I just think where the Vikings are as a franchise, I kind of like what they've done roster-wise. He's not going to have to play right now. I think the fact that Sam Darnold is there to learn from, I have a lot of faith in the coaching staff, in the scheme, and the system there. So I think J.J. has set up the best. That's just my opinion because I think they're going to be a good team. We just may not be seeing that until week 6 or 8 or maybe even year 2 from that standpoint.
Yeah, I think the Minnesota quarterback situation, Randy, is going to be fascinating. I know there are a lot of reports coming out of St. Paul that look like they want to give Sam Darnold a legit shot. Kevin O'Connell feels like he can legitimately resurrect this young man's career. He's got a ton of talent, former top 5 pick, so it'll be fascinating to monitor that as the regular season and training camp plays out. Keeping on the quarterback position, though, Randy, being a former general manager and someone that was in these negotiating rooms, what do you make of the forever-changing quarterback market where we sit right now? I think Cam Newton caught a lot of flack during the regular season, Randy, saying there are game changers and game managers. Yep. In terms of the guys that are deserving of those market resetting contracts, there's probably only a handful, but as we're going to continue to find out here, the market is the market and teams are going to have to pay the piper, so to speak. When you look at two situations in particular, Miami and Dallas, I was heavy on saying, look, I would have hit the reset button during the draft and sent both of those two quarterbacks elsewhere because I'm not comfortable giving them market resetting deals. To start with Tua, if you were the Miami Dolphins, knowing how he fits like a glove in Mike McDaniel's system, do you think his success that he's been able to have is more of a result of the system or his talent at the quarterback position? And then a two-parter for you, would you ultimately pay Tua and give him that market resetting contract?
I think the fact that Tua has been there in that system really lends itself to why he's been good. So I do think the system gets credit, but I do think his skill set fits perfectly in that system. Where I struggle and where I draw the line at with these quarterbacks is, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, when it comes time to pay, unless you have options, you're going to pay.
Right.
I would struggle with paying one of these guys who doesn't take my offense above and beyond what's being schemed. And that's a little bit of a struggle for me with Tua. Obviously, you have the durability issue. That's always going to be there with him. But can he do more when the play breaks down, or can he get you out of bad plays to get you plays above and beyond the scheme, the system? That I don't know yet. I think with regard to Dak, if you're comparing those two like you did in your question, mm-hmm. I think we've seen Dak carry an offense above and beyond the play calls and the scheme somewhat. Not to the point where we've seen some of these other guys do it, but that to me is the defining note, is that can this quarterback take our offense above and beyond? And if he can, then you're going to pay him. That's why I think you're going to see a guy like Jordan Love get paid, you know, biggest money of all of them probably as soon as Green Bay can pay him, because he can take you above the scheme, above the play calls, and make plays. And I think that's the hard thing to define. I think that's probably why Jacksonville played Trevor Lawrence. Because he's got the skill set to go above and beyond the system. Now, he hasn't done it consistently, but it's there, so you have that hope. Some of these other guys, and I'll throw Jared Goff in there, who I like and had a great year last year, mm-hmm. there's limitations because they can only, in my opinion, carry you as far as the scheme can carry you. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you answered it perfectly, and I think you're the perfect guy to talk about this because you've been in those rooms before. Going back to Miami here in particular, and you know how these negotiations go. It is literally the job of the team to tell said player why we don't think you're deserving of this contract. There's reports going on. I don't know if you guys have reported it at The Athletic that there is some there's a sizable gap in terms of where Miami and Tua are with these negotiations. How difficult is it, and what risk do you run in terms of fracturing the relationship long term when it comes to these contract negotiations? Because I'm sure Miami's putting up the numbers that we keep talking about. 1-7 versus playoff teams last year, 16 points per game in those 8 games compared to 35 in the others. So clearly there are some numbers that say maybe Tua isn't deserving of this contract.
Well, I surely like the idea that they're making him sweat a little bit and not just rolling over. I like their philosophy. I still think they'll make a deal. As we all know, deadlines spur actions, and there's really no deadline right now. When Tua has to roll his body out there again and put everything at risk in his career, that's probably when we'll see a deal get done. But I don't think the Dolphins have to pay him, at least not right now. They can... you know, afford to let him play out this year. They've got a tag for next year. There's time to pay and reward him. And I don't think there's a rift that develops at all if you're communicating with the player correctly and he understands where you're coming from. It's not a slight. It's not going to develop into a soiled relationship down the road. I think sometimes that gets overrated because we see it on the outside. Right. I think the media sees it. They want to drive that stake, but it's not really there. It doesn't really exist, having been a part of those conversations for years.
Yeah, excellent perspective right now as we're joined by former NFL general manager Randy Mueller. You can give him a follow on the old X app at @RandyMueller_. I want to take things to the NFC East here for a second. The New York Giants, the lab rat for the in-season or off-season hard knocks, rather, and you're getting plenty of insight into some of those really difficult conversations and decisions that they've had to make here. One, if you got to catch any of the hard knocks, then two, what did you make of Joe Shane's comments surrounding Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones?
Yeah, I've watched it thoroughly. In fact, I'm probably going to watch it more than once. I love this off-season version of it. Yeah. It's in the wheelhouse of GMs, right? These conversations happen. This is how you spend your life, in these kind of conversations and in these scenarios. So I like it. I'm surprised that Joe and the Giants have been as forthright as they are. There's a lot of information that can be matriculated down through a lot of different levels. And a lot of it has been out there for the fans, and I think fans are lucky to get this much. I think that the conversation that he had with Barkley when he told him they were going to let him be a free agent and not franchise him was fascinating to me because I think it's one thing to do right by the player, but it's the GM's job to do right by the franchise. And I think if we are to believe what we've seen, ownership clearly wanted to keep the running back. Yeah. A lot of the staff clearly wanted to keep the running back, and that's personnel staff. That vision was clear to me. It just seems like Joe did not want to commit the money to do it. It seems to me like Joe wants to sink or swim with Daniel Jones, and he won't, you know, commit to giving him other weapons or paying him back. Here's the thing. They paid him both last year. The cap went way up now, and it went way up last year. Yeah. This year, And why can't they pay him both this year? They could have tagged him again. I didn't like the fact that Joe alluded to the fact that he didn't want to go through that again, that it was a hardship on him personally. I don't think that really matters. I think you've got to do right. You've got to put on your big boy pants, and you've got to do what's best for the Giants.
Randy, your perspective on this is always fascinating to me. So the idea, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on in the program before we get out of here. I was taken aback by the comment of, I'm not paying Daniel Jones $40 million a year to hand the ball off to Saquon Barkley, when in reality, it's exactly what your NFC East counterparts in the Philadelphia Eagles are doing. So that was interesting to me, Randy. And then this is, I guess, more of my question. When you look at the decision to pay Daniel Jones the contract that they did, I'm asking you to speculate here. There's just no way that Brian Daboll and Joe Shane were the ones banging on the table for this extension. It felt like something that was coming from ownership. We know the relationship that they have with the Mannings and that relationship that the Mannings have with Daniel Jones. So do you think Joe Shane is sort of giving the Giants the finger here and saying, hey, we're going to roll with your guy? I told you I didn't want to pay him, but let's just show you that it's not going to work.
Well, it's possible. I mean, you can surmise from the conversations that we've been privy to that there's a little bit of a rub between those guys, and it's clear how ownership stood. Tim McDonald, the personnel director, is also part of the Mara family, so there's a definite vision for what the Maras want to do with this franchise. I don't know how it came down as to who said what to who when they decided to pay Daniel Jones. I thought it was more like this. They didn't have any other options. And that's the part that makes me nervous in all of these conversations when it comes to building your team, is you've got to give your team options. And I know this, having been a GM for a long time in the NFL, the worst deals I ever made were the ones I had no options. And so I'm always looking for options. And it just seemed to me like they were painted into a corner at quarterback. They didn't like any of their options, and so they paid Daniel. And maybe it is the fact that he's got to sink or swim on his own. But you're right. The Eagles are paying Jalen Hurts $50 million, and he's handing off to a $12 million back. So it makes some sense to somebody out there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that is, you know, where the conversation gets really interesting. I'm being messy with it. I think ownership sort of kind of forced the front office's hand here. But we'll see how that ultimately plays out. I want to talk about another quarterback that is in – I don't want to call it make or break, because financially the team is pretty much stuck to him. But Randy, when you view the Deshaun Watson situation with the Cleveland Browns, knowing what he was prior to getting to Cleveland, is it a situation where at quarterback you need reps and he hasn't had a lot over the last two seasons? Do you think he's capable of returning to that top five quarterback level with the Browns?
Well, we have not shown and seen an indicator of that, and it would make me nervous as well, because as we know, we're getting into the meat of his contract now, and you're talking about a guy taking a $68 million or so dollar cap hit against the rest of your roster. That's a struggle for me. He has always been a slightly built guy, in my opinion, so durability has always been an issue. Yeah. We've seen it come out the last couple years in Cleveland, and so it is a struggle, and it's a little bit of an albatross that they put themselves into. He has to play better. We haven't seen it yet. We'll see. It may just be the fact that they were all in on making this decision together. I say Steph, Kevin Stefanski, Andrew Berry, ownership. So that makes it somewhat easier if we can all say, hey, we were just wrong on this, and at some point they have to move on. But taking a cap hit of over $120 million is unheard of. So you're right. They're married to him. He's got to play better. Or they've got to do like they did last year and come up with some kind of a hodgepodge on offense where the other guys can play, but Deshaun's not going anywhere, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think it's super interesting, Randy, because on paper, right, I don't think there are many rosters in the NFL 1 through 53 that are better than what Andrew Berry and the Cleveland Browns have been able to assemble. They've done a really good job putting a team around Deshaun Watson. It's just on him moving forward to be that finishing piece to the puzzle. I want to keep things in that AFC North. The Pittsburgh Steelers, we were talking about this before we brought you on, Randy. After this year, Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, both not going to be under contract. If I had to put you on the hot seat, Randy, and make you put some shekels on it, do you think either of these two quarterbacks will be in Pittsburgh beyond 2024?
Oh, boy, that is a great question. And you are putting me on the hot seat. But I would say this. Yeah. There's no better system that fits Justin Fields that he could be running right now.
Yes.
Now, he's still got to get the ball out quick. I said this for the last 2 years. Until he learns how to get rid of the ball on time and processing the information to go in the right spot, that's going to be a struggle for him. But I think because of his age, his athleticism, some of the other traits he has, he fits great with their scheme and what Arthur Smith has brought to the table. I don't know where Russell is. I think Russell, I'm a Seattle guy, so I saw that train kind of getting off the tracks in Seattle his last year or two. Obviously, we saw what happened in Denver. So it's been a while. It's been a minute since we've seen Russell and anybody's looking to let him cook. So I don't know that that's going to be a long-term situation. So I think Justin Fields, probably if I was a betting man, I'd bet on him being there longer than Russell, whether that's longer than a year, his production will determine that this season.
So, Randy, in this situation, right, I think everybody that I talk to in the know out in Pittsburgh, see Daniels is. And I know we had a conversation last week about whether or not you play him in preseason. He had 350 yards passing and 250 yards rushing in an SEC game. You tell me how good Jayden Daniels is going to be here in Washington. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll continue to take a big picture look at the National Football League when we're joined by former NFL General Manager Randy Mueller next here on The Fan. Welcome back. It's Overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Liddell Willingham riding with you for about another half hour before we dish things over to the Infinity Sports Network. Want to continue talking all things National Football League. Joining us right now is former NFL General Manager Randy Mueller. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Randy Mueller _ former 2000 NFL Executive of the Year and the co-host of the Football GM podcast for The Athletic. Randy, I appreciate you giving me some time as always, my man.
I'm doing great. Good to be back with you.
Yes, indeed, my man. It's been a while since I've been able to catch up with you. Huge fan of your work. Always enjoy listening to you and Mike. It's been a while, like I said, Randy, since I got to talk to you. So I want to get your thoughts as we sit here about a week away from most teams reporting for training camp. We had 6 first-round quarterbacks be selected, the most in NFL history, Randy. Which one of these young quarterbacks, outside of the obvious answer in Caleb Williams, do you think is best set up to come in and have immediate success in their rookie campaign?
Well, that is a great question, and one that I'm not sure we're going to know the answer to right now. Obviously, you'd want the best roster surrounding that young guy. I think the way it's set up now, I think J.J. McCarthy has as good a chance as any, and that doesn't mean he's going to be the starter week one either.
Right.
I just think where the Vikings are as a franchise, I kind of like what they've done roster-wise. He's not going to have to play right now. I think the fact that Sam Darnold is there to learn from, I have a lot of faith in the coaching staff, in the scheme and the system there. So I think J.J. is set up the best. That's just my opinion because I think they're going to be a good team. We just may not be seeing that until week 6 or 8 or maybe even year 2 from that standpoint.
Yeah, I think the Minnesota quarterback situation, Randy, is going to be fascinating. I know there are a lot of reports coming out of St. Paul that, look, like they want to give Sam Darnold a legit shot. Kevin O'Connell feels like he can legitimately resurrect this young man's career. He's got a ton of talent, former top 5 pick, so it'll be fascinating to monitor that as the regular season and training camp plays out. Keep it on the quarterback position, though, Randy. Being a former general manager and someone that was in these negotiating rooms, what do you make of the forever-changing quarterback market where we sit right now? I think Cam Newton caught a lot of flack during the regular season, Randy, saying there are game changers and game managers. Yep. In terms of the guys that are deserving of those market-resetting contracts, there's probably only a handful, but as we're going to continue to find out here, the market is the market, and teams are going to have to pay the piper, so to speak. When you look at two situations in particular, Miami and Dallas, I was heavy on saying, look, I would have hit the reset button during the draft and sent both of those two quarterbacks elsewhere because I'm not comfortable giving them market-resetting deals. To start with Tua, if you were the Miami Dolphins, knowing how he fits like a glove in Mike McDaniel's system, Do you think his success that he's been able to have is more of a result of the system or his talent at the quarterback position? And then a two-parter for you, would you ultimately pay Tua and give him that market-resetting contract?
I think the fact that Tua has been there in that system really lends itself to why he's been good. So I do think the system gets credit, but I do think his skill set fits perfectly in that system. Where I struggle and where I draw the line at with these quarterbacks is, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, when it comes time to pay, unless you have options, you're going to pay.
Right.
I would struggle with paying one of these guys who doesn't take my offense above and beyond what's being schemed. And that's a little bit of a struggle for me with Tua. Obviously, you have the durability issue. That's always going to be there with him. But can he do more when the play breaks down, or can he get you out of bad plays to get you plays above and beyond the scheme, the system? That I don't know yet. I think with regard to Dak, if you're comparing those two like you did in your question, I think we've seen Dak carry an offense above and beyond the play calls and the scheme somewhat. Not to the point where we've seen some of these other guys do it, but that to me is the defining note, is that can this quarterback take our offense above and beyond? And if he can, then you're going to pay him. That's why I think you're going to see a guy like Jordan Love get paid, you know, biggest money of all of them probably as soon as Green Bay can pay him, because he can take you above the scheme, above the play calls, and make plays. And I think that's the hard thing to define. I think that's probably why Jacksonville played Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
He's got the skill set to go above and beyond the system. Now, he hasn't done it consistently, but it's there, so you have that hope. Some of these other guys, and I'll throw Jared Goff in there, who I like and had a great year last year, there's limitations because they can only, in my opinion, carry you as far as the scheme can carry you. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you answered it perfectly, and I think you're the perfect guy to talk about this because you've been in those rooms before. And going back to Miami here in particular, and you know how these negotiations go. It is literally the job of the team to tell said player why we don't think you're deserving of this contract. There's reports going on. I don't know if you guys have reported it at The Athletic that there is some there's a sizable gap in terms of where Miami and Tua are with these negotiations. How difficult is it, and what risk do you run in terms of fracturing the relationship long term when it comes to these contract negotiations? Because I'm sure Miami's putting up the numbers that we keep talking about. 1-7 versus playoff teams last year, 16 points per game in those 8 games compared to 35 in the others. So clearly there are some numbers that say maybe Tua isn't deserving of this contract.
Well, I surely like the idea that they're making him sweat a little bit and not just rolling over. I like their philosophy. I still think they'll make a deal. As we all know, deadlines spur actions, and there's really no deadline right now. When Tua has to roll his body out there again and put everything at risk in his career, that's probably when we'll see a deal get done. But I don't think the Dolphins have to pay him, at least not right now. They can, you know, afford to let him play out this year. They've got a tag for next year. There's time to pay and reward him. And I don't think there's a rift that develops at all if you're communicating with the player correctly and he understands where you're coming from. It's not a slight. It's not going to develop into a soiled relationship down the road. I think sometimes that gets overrated because we see it on the outside.
Right.
I think the media sees it. They want to drive that stake, but it's not really there. It doesn't really exist, having been a part of those conversations for years.
Yeah, excellent perspective right now as we're joined by former NFL general manager Randy Mueller. You can give him a follow on the old X app at @RandyMueller_. I want to take things to the NFC East here for a second. The New York Giants, the lab rat for the in-season or off-season hard knocks, rather, and you're getting plenty of insight into some of those really difficult conversations and decisions that they've had to make here. One, if you got to catch any of the hard knocks, then two, what did you make of Joe Shane's comments surrounding Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones?
Yeah, I've watched it thoroughly. In fact, I'm probably going to watch it more than once. I love this off-season version of it.
Yeah.
It's in the wheelhouse of GMs, right? These conversations happen. This is how you spend your life, in these kind of conversations and in these scenarios. So I like it. I'm surprised that Joe and the Giants have been as forthright as they are. There's a lot of information that can be matriculated down through a lot of different levels. And a lot of it has been out there for the fans, and I think fans are lucky to get this much. I think the conversation that he had with Barkley when he told him they were going to let him be a free agent and not franchise him was fascinating to me, because yeah. I think it's one thing to do right by the player, but it's the GM's job to do right by the franchise. And I think sure. if we are to believe what we've seen, ownership clearly wanted to keep the running back. Yeah. A lot of the staff clearly wanted to keep the running back, and that's personnel staff. That vision was clear to me. It just seems like Joe did not want to commit the money to do it. It seems to me like Joe wants to sink or swim with Daniel Jones, and he won't, you know, commit to giving him other weapons or paying him back. Here's the thing. They paid him both last year. The cap went way up now, and it went way up last year, this year, and why can't they pay him both this year? They could have tagged him again. I didn't like the fact that Joe alluded to the fact that he didn't want to go through that again, that it was a hardship on him personally. I don't think that really matters. I think you got to do right. You got to put on your big boy pants, and you got to do what's best for the Giants.
Randy, your perspective on this is always fascinating to me. So the idea, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on in the program before we get out of here. I was taken aback by the comment of, I'm not paying Daniel Jones $40 million a year to hand the ball off to Saquon Barkley, when in reality, it's exactly what your NFC East counterparts in the Philadelphia Eagles are doing. So that was interesting to me, Randy. And then this is, I guess, more of my question. When you look at the decision to pay Daniel Jones the contract that they did, I'm asking you to speculate here. There's just no way that Brian Daboll and Joe Shane were the ones banging on the table for this extension. It felt like something that was coming from ownership. We know the relationship that they have with the Mannings and that relationship that the Mannings have with Daniel Jones. So do you think Joe Shane is sort of giving the Giants the finger here and saying, hey, we're going to roll with your guy. I told you I didn't want to pay him, but let's just show you that it's not going to work.
Well, it's possible. I mean, you can surmise from the conversations that we've been privy to that there's a little bit of a rub between those guys, and it's clear how ownership stood. Tim McDonald, the personnel director, is also part of the Mara family, so there's a definite vision for what the Maras want to do with this franchise. I don't know how it came down as to who said what to who when they decided to pay Daniel Jones. I thought it was more like this. They didn't have any other options. And that's the part that makes me nervous in all of these conversations when it comes to building your team, is you've got to give your team options. And I know this, having been a GM for a long time in the NFL, the worst deals I ever made were the ones I had no options. And so I'm always looking for options, and it just seemed to me like they were painted into a corner at quarterback. They didn't like any of their options, and so they paid Daniel. And maybe it is the fact that he's got to sink or swim on his own. But you're right. The Eagles are paying Jalen Hurts $50 million, and he's handing off to a $12 million back. So it makes some sense to somebody out there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that is, you know, where the conversation gets really interesting. I'm being messy with it. I think ownership sort of kind of forced the front office's hand here. But we'll see how that ultimately plays out. I want to talk about another quarterback that is in – I don't want to call it make or break, because financially the team is pretty much stuck to him. But Randy, when you view the Deshaun Watson situation with the Cleveland Browns, knowing what he was prior to getting to Cleveland, is it a situation where at quarterback you need reps and he hasn't had a lot over the last two seasons? Do you think he's capable of returning to that top five quarterback level with the Browns?
Well, we have not seen an indicator of that, and that would make me nervous as well, because as we know, we're getting into the meat of his contract now, and you're talking about a guy taking a $68 million or so dollar cap hit against the rest of your roster. That's a struggle for me. He has always been a slightly built guy, in my opinion, so durability has always been an issue. Yeah. We've seen it come out the last couple years in Cleveland. And so it is a struggle, and it's a little bit of an albatross that they put themselves into. He has to play better. We haven't seen it yet. We'll see. It may just be the fact that they were all in on making this decision together. I say Kevin Stefanski, Andrew Berry, ownership. So that makes it somewhat easier if we can all say, hey, we were just wrong on this, and at some point they have to move on. But taking a cap hit of over $120 million is unheard of.
Yeah.
So you're right. They're married to him. He's got to play better. Or they've got to do like they did last year and come up with some kind of a hodgepodge on offense where the other guys can play, but Deshaun's not going anywhere, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think it's super interesting, Randy, because on paper, right, I don't think there are many rosters in the NFL 1 through 53 that are better than what Andrew Berry and the Cleveland Browns have been able to assemble. They've done a really good job putting a team around Deshaun Watson. It's just on him moving forward to be that finishing piece to the puzzle. I want to keep things in that AFC North. The Pittsburgh Steelers, we were talking about this before we brought you on, Randy. After this year, Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, both not going to be under contract. If I had to put you on the hot seat, Randy, and make you put some shekels on it, do you think either of these two quarterbacks will be in Pittsburgh beyond 2024?
Oh, boy, that is a great question. And you are putting me on the hot seat. But I would say this.
Yeah.
There's no better system that fits Justin Fields that he could be running right now.
Yes.
Now, he's still got to get the ball out quick. I said this for the last 2 years. Until he learns how to get rid of the ball on time and processing the information to go in the right spot, that's going to be a struggle for him. But I think because of his age, his athleticism, some of the other traits he has, he fits great with their scheme and what Arthur Smith has brought to the table. I don't know where Russell is. I think Russell, I'm a Seattle guy, so I saw that train kind of getting off the tracks in Seattle his last year or two. Obviously, we saw what happened in Denver. So it's been a while. It's been a minute since we've seen Russell and anybody's looking to let him cook. So I don't know that that's going to be a long-term situation. So I think Justin Fields probably, if I was a betting man, and I bet on him being there longer than Russell, whether that's longer than a year, his production will determine that this season.
So, Randy, in this situation, right, I think everybody that I talk to in the know out in Pittsburgh seem to believe that Russell Wilson is going to get all the reps during training camp, and this isn't really a battle. He's just going to be the guy week one. If you are the general manager and you're looking at two of these players, two of your assets, and one of them is younger and has a ton of more upside, does it make sense to you for them to give Russell the first bite at the apple, so to speak, instead of trying to give the better and long-term investment the chance to win the job?
I think the reason they've done that, Linnell, is they promised Russell the job when they signed him.
That doesn't mean
that he's going to end up with the job, but I think they, to get him to sign and do the things that he did, I think he has that in his pocket. He knows they've given me first chance. He of all people, will realize that the same thing happened in Seattle 10 or 12 years ago when they had Matt Flynn and promised him the job, and Russell beat him out as a third-round pick.
Yeah.
So I think it's a battle, and maybe the most fascinating one all preseason that I'll be watching, because I think the first bite of the apple may not be the last bite, and I think the system fits Fields best.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think, you know, him in that Arthur Smith scheme where they're going to lean heavily on the running game, where they're going to move the pocket for the quarterback, I think it fits Justin Fields perfectly. Now, where Arthur Smith made his money at and how he got that head coaching job in Atlanta was the time that he spent in Tennessee with the Titans. They're another fascinating team entering next year. I'll put it to you this way, Randy. I love their philosophy because they basically said, we're not 100% sure if Will Levis is the guy or not, but we're going to do everything in our power to find out here in 2024. What do you make of the Titans and what they could potentially be in what all of a sudden, Randy, is a loaded AFC South?
Well, I think they are doing the right thing by surrounding him with what they can, by adding the roster quality that they've done, and I think it's been substantial.
Yeah,
I think it gives them a chance. I am not one that's going to drink the Will Levis Kool-Aid. I haven't seen it. I didn't see it in college, and I surely haven't seen it to this point. So I struggle with that. So I guess building the roster at some point will be good for some quarterback. I'm not sure it's going to be Will Levis in the long run, so I'm with you there.
Yeah, it's going to be one of my favorite things to monitor throughout the season. Brian Callahan and the job that he did last year with Cincy's backup should give you some reason to feel like he can get Will Levis on track as well. Speaking of another second-year quarterback that we got to see last year, Bryce Young and the Carolina Panthers. A lot was made about the star-studded, rock-star coaching staff that they assembled on the offensive side of the football that did not work. I feel like it was because of a lack of weapons. What are your expectations for Bryce Young going into year two here?
My expectations are fairly low, and I'm sad to say that. I just don't see there being a lot of change. I don't think this is as good a team as was before. You can't tell me they've lost their three best players on defense, and I don't know how that makes you better.
Yeah.
Offensively, I agree. I think they're without explosive playmaking. I think the quarterback, because of his size, is always going to be an uphill battle. And I feel bad for him. I just think it may be a little bit of a misevaluation, and everybody loves the kid. He's a great character guy. The other players like him. He's a good leader. But I just always come back to this fact that we're not looking for 5'10", 190, I'm telling you. not at this level. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And that was my whole thing when he was coming out. There's just not a lot of precedent for a guy of that stature having big-time success around the league that has warranted a number one overall pick. So I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. I want to take things over to the AFC East. Obviously, we can't talk AFC East without talking the Jets. If you were Joe Douglas in this situation, would you feel like you're in shaky territory right now? Because it sort of feels like if they don't get it done this year, Randy, they're going to be cleaning house out there in New York.
Well, he's entering year six of a contract. I don't think anybody gets a six-year rebuild. We need to hook on to that deal.
Because right, look.
That is a heck of a deal. Nobody's been given more rope than Joe to build that team. It is what it is. I think they've built it on sand, and maybe they can firm it up at some point. But the desperation that they've showed between signing older guys on one-year deals, and needing about a half a dozen what-ifs to come through for them to be good. Yeah. And has anything ever hung on the balance of a 40-year-old Achilles any more in the history of sports than this? Probably not. So I think it's going to be a struggle for him. I know a lot of New York people that want to jump on the bandwagon, and I get it. I just think it's kind of false chatter at this point. And until I see it, I think I've got question marks on offense and defensive staff. I've got question marks a lot of ways, and I just don't know how all the dots can be connected.
Randy, I'll let you go on this, my friend. You've been awesome as always. Last year's Houston Texans took the league by storm. C.J. Stroud came in and had a massive impact on not just the on-field stuff, but the culture in that locker room. Who do you think's got the best chance at being this year's Houston Texans?
Boy, that's a good question. I think the fact that C.J. Stroud carried a franchise that had been downtrodden for many years and took them over the hump tells you it's possible.
Yeah.
So it's got to be someplace like that that has had a bunch of change. Maybe it's the Commanders.
Don't get me excited, Randy. Look, don't get me
I'm
all
just
geeked
saying,
up.
I like Jaden Daniels. I think they've made a ton of changes that need to happen. Now let's see if the changes on paper can actually happen by bringing people together. And we'll see. That's Dan Quinn's specialty. Maybe he can get them to come together. What they did with the Commanders reminds me of what we did in New Orleans when I went there as their GM in 2000. We made so many changes, but the coaching staff did an awesome job bringing everybody together. And we melded as a team beyond our talent. And I think that's a possibility with the Washington Commanders this year.
Well, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Randy Mueller thinks the Commanders are going to the playoffs, baby. Randy, look, I appreciate you giving me some time as always, my friend. We will do it again soon.
Sounds good. Always good to be with you.
Big shout out to our guy, Randy Mueller, former NFL GM, joining the program. Always love talking all things NFL with him as we get geared up for training camp. Your Commanders get set.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.